What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. Lots to talk to John Gibbons about. I mentioned there with Elaine Cobb that Paris is claiming to be the most environmentally friendly Olympics ever. Will you give them credit for that?
Evening, Matt. Yeah, you definitely would. They've avoided the sort of concrete spree usually associated with the Olympic Games, where cities kind of build these mausoleums to sport, which you might say is great. Problem is, they're abandoned. I remember as a kid travelling to Rome in the late 70s and wandering through this complex of concrete. And I said, what's this? Oh, this is all built in for the Rome Olympics in 1960. And I said, well, what about now? Oh, it was just abandoned. So Olympics have been associated with egregious waste. So Paris made an effort, even to include, apparently, people swimming in the Seine as part of the events, and they cleaned up the Seine in the process.
So yeah,
I know. That's a doesn't exactly hold water. But Paris generally has really gone, ever since they got a new mayor in 2014, really has gone down the route of becoming a very green city, a genuinely green city, something we might talk about another day. But I'll give them some credit. The big issue, Matt, though, with all these mega sporting events, the events themselves have a carbon impact, but the real whammer is the tens and hundreds of thousands of people flying to these events. That's the stinger. So if you'd look at a big sporting event, a big music festival, it is the travelling fans that are the big impact.
Yeah, but actually it hasn't added to the number of people in Paris, apparently, because it's everyone else who normally would have gone there at this time of year for tourism is avoiding it because of the Olympics. It hasn't really added to the numbers in any way.
Well, the issue, Matt, is people flying from all over the world to the Olympics. That's the issue. And you'll see the same thing with any major sporting event.
It's a good job they weren't going in through Frankfurt today, so wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. We had a climate protest in Frankfurt, and basically some activists got onto the runway and, as is now customary, glued themselves to the runway. So I think seven people got through, and the Germans are very upset about it, and their transport minister, Volker Wissing, wants to throw the book at them, terrible criminal action, demanding tough penalties against these activists, which is very similar, something we didn't actually get to talk about last Thursday, was the incredible sentences handed down to Just Stop Oil activists in the UK last week. So this is what the Germans are looking for.
Hey, what was incredible about that?
Well, what was incredible is Roger Hallam, who's the lead guy in Just Stop Oil. Basically, he was charged with being on a Zoom call, Matt, right? And conspiring with others to plan an event in the future. And for that, he got 5 years penal servitude. You might remember a group called Pussy
Sorry,
Riot.
Penal servitude where? What country?
In England.
This is in England. Do penal servitude, do they?
Well, it's called, they get locked up in jail for 5 years,
okay.
Right? Now, if you remember Pussy Riot, who were a Russian activist group, they did something similar. And everybody in the West said, my God, those Russians are terrible. And you know what they got for their standing up to Putin at the time? 2 years in jail. So this is really incredible. And it's an incredibly dangerous trend, Matt, that we're seeing. The persecution.
Surely
of
what's dangerous
protests.
Is gluing yourself to a runway on an airport. They were lucky they were seen.
Well, I think they made a point of being seen, to be fair. They didn't go there to get run over. They went there to cause disruption. And the old saying about...
But what good does it do to cause this disruption? Yeah. Does it change anything?
Well, it's a good question. I suppose we have an alternative, right? And the alternative is to do nothing. Now, we've worked on that alternative really hard for 30 years. And as a result, we're now in the middle of a climate disaster. Monday, Matt, of this week, was the hottest day ever recorded in Earth history. Two of the last 7 days, 7 days, have been the two hottest days in Earth history. So while we might kind of ooh and ah and say, God, these people are such a nuisance, the world is burning down around us. And there's a few people, courageous people like this, who are getting up off their ass, getting out, putting themselves in harm's way, getting beaten up, getting arrested. And they're not doing it for glory, Matt. They're doing it for you and me and our kids.
Of course, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, whatever about the rest of the world burning, it's not happening here in Ireland. So if it's not happening here, why do we need to be doing anything about it?
Yeah, well, that's sort of cognitive bias that we sort of look around and say, well, it's a little cool in Ireland in July, so we'll just ignore the fact that parts of Europe are becoming basically uninhabitable. There's areas in Europe, before you go to your travel agent, if that's your plan at the moment, where you'd want to be saying, I'm not going there. Huge chunks of Central Europe, down into Spain, Portugal, Morocco, these are up in the mid-40s. These are temperatures, Matt, that used to happen maybe once every 10 or 20 years. We're getting them not just every year, but we're getting them multiple times in the same season.
Actually, I can't find it now, but I did see something during the week about how Irish air travel is the highest amongst, I think, every EU country. You have it there, do you?
I do indeed, yeah. This is the European Commission published this a couple of days ago.
Ah, yes, I have it now, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, the European average came in at 25, if you like, in terms of percentages of the people who have used air travel in the last 12 months. In Ireland, we came in not quite the highest, but we were at an index of 47 on this scale. So we were basically in the top three in Europe. Now, I suppose a couple of things to say about that.
We are an island.
You beat me to it. Yes, we are an island, right? The second thing is, and looking at this chart, there's other countries, for example, like Hungary, Romania, Portugal, right down the bottom of the chart. Now, they're not islands. Guess what it's connected to? Is their income. These are lower income countries. So what you see in Ireland, it's not just the water surrounding us, it's the fact that we're a very high income country. And I'm sorry if this is going to upset some people who think it's not true. We're a very high income country. What do we do with that income? We buy oversized vehicles, we go on multiple foreign holidays, and we travel basically like there's no tomorrow. And that kind of loops right back to our climate protesters. There's a few people standing up and saying, this is really bad. But the rest of us are saying, oh, the hell with
a listener says, not the hottest day ever. The hottest day ever recorded. Big difference and should be corrected. Listener, John said the hottest day ever recorded. He was quite specific and quite careful to say that.
Thank you for clarifying, Matt. The instrumental records in Europe go back minimum 150 years and in some cases 400 years. But for global accuracy, we can say to about 1850, 1860, we have global instrumental records, and that's what I was referring to.
We started the programme talking about agriculture's contribution to emissions. And we have a lot of farmers, John, who think you are down on them all the time. But today, I want you to tell me what you think of the construction industry and particularly the cement, like you mentioned a little bit earlier in relation to the Olympics in Rome.
That's right. Concrete, it's one of those things that doesn't get half the attention, Matt, and I'd include myself in that, half the attention that it deserves. First of all, about 8%. So 1 in 12 of all the global carbon emissions are directly as a result of producing cement / concrete. Now, that's an incredible amount. Now, it's not surprising when you consider that 70% of all the buildings in the world are made of concrete. So it's gigantic. And there was an astonishing statistic you may have heard recently where for 3 years in the 2010s, China poured more concrete in 3 years than the US poured in the 20th century. So we're in an exponential phase of concrete use, among so many other things. That the issue about concrete is that it is incredibly carbon intensive. And without boring people with a chemistry lesson, basically concrete, it typically is made from limestone. Limestone is calcium carbonate, but they have to break down the limestone in order to do it. So the first thing when you break down limestone is you get a release of carbon dioxide. That's the first part. The second part is you then have to mix it up and heat it to 1400 degrees centigrade in order to make your concrete. Now, that is a massively energy intensive business. So when you're pouring billions of tons of concrete, the manufacturing process is incredibly energy intensive. Now, the good news, and there is some good news on this, is that a US company has come up with a method that is really genuinely revolutionary. They figured out a way. The traditional cement is called Portland cement, right? And that, this is the whole limestone process. So they've come up with naturally occurring rocks called zeolites. Yeah. And basically, you can break them up to begin this process, number one, without carbon emissions ensuing. But secondly, and this is the really the killer punch, is that if you use this technology, it happens at room temperature. So that 1400 degree furnace, you don't need. Now, at the moment, it's small scale. And you know, Matt, I'm not a sort of a techno-optimist. I don't jump at every sort of technology wheeze like, you know, carbon capture and so on. But this is genuinely game-changing in the concrete industry. We're not going to get rid of concrete anytime soon.
No, because you wouldn't have us going back to straw huts and wood, would you?
Precisely. So therefore, what we need to do is to apply technology. Now, there's an issue here, Matt. The concrete industry is incredibly conservative. They don't want to change. They've got their existing infrastructure, their existing contracts. We don't have a tax on concrete. If you put a carbon tax on concrete, you would get this transition in a decade. At the moment, the problem is the concrete industry, a very conservative, very dowdy industry, is looking at this and going, yeah, well, what's in it for us, right? Burning the world down, not my problem.
But in fairness, aren't an awful lot more buildings now made with less concrete, an awful lot of glass and steel rather than using concrete?
Well, again, glass and steel, Matt, these are very carbon intensive ingredients.
Jeez, you have to use something.
No, of course you have to use something. I make the point, concrete is the key ingredients. And finally, we have a way of producing concrete that isn't quite so devastating from a carbon point of view. But the impact here, Matt, this is far bigger, by the way, the global concrete, than, for example, the aviation industry, the much maligned and correctly maligned aviation industry, is a whippet compared to concrete. Now, that's fair, of course, because we use concrete absolutely everywhere.
Okay, tell us about a drop in the number of bats. This is in the UK, but you suspect it's the same here in Ireland.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is part of this very depressing decline of nature that we're seeing all around us. So essentially, conservation groups across the UK, this summer, of course, it's been a wet, damp, cold summer in England as well as in Ireland. And they're encountering loads of barely fledged juvenile bats that are coming in either dead or dying, some of them 50% or less below the normal weight. So they're looking at this and trying to figure out what's happening. So, of course, what do bats eat? Bats eat insects, particularly flying insects. The flying insects in Britain and, of course, in Ireland and elsewhere have been hammered by the use of pesticides. With pesticides being used all over the place, they have flattened the insect population. And the natural predators, of course, for insects would be birds and bats. But because we're using chemicals to wipe out the insects, we're also in the process wiping out the food supply for bats and birds. So we're basically destroying our own natural pest controllers into the process. And the other things they've identified as kind of leading to this bat apocalypse is habitat destruction, the extensification of artificial light, which is interfering with bat habitats again, and of course, building developments occurring all over the place. So we're also seeing about the same effect, by the way, in Britain, with butterflies and moths. Huge scarcities this year. Now, I've been out and about over the last few nights, you know, out in the usual way, and it's sort of balmy summer nights. And I stopped at a garden close to mine recently, or the other night, and it's a fabulous garden. It's a really enthusiastic gardener. It was absolutely bursting with all kinds of exotic plants and colour. And I stood for about 3 minutes, and guess what? Not a single insect in sight. And I thought, it's really quite chilling.
And just very briefly, tell me about the birds in Lebanon.
Yeah, this is a depressing little item, Matt, I'm afraid. What we have now is the headline on the piece was massacred for TikTok likes. So essentially, these are migrating birds, migrating up between Africa and the European continent. And they have to travel at relatively low altitudes through parts of Lebanon, where it's just a national sport to go out and blast them. They reckon about 2.5 million birds that they know of being killed illegally. And then before we came on this evening, I looked it up, I'm sorry to say, on social media, and I watched a guy chased after a stork in Lebanon with a rifle. And the stork tried to fly away, and he blasted it out of the sky. And this is at the side of a road. This is like a national sport. It is such a weird, strange thing. We're a strange species, Matt.
Thank you very much, John Gibbons, for joining us for our weekly Environment Spot.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.